Welcome to Pitch Deck Series 5, where we'll be having bite-sized conversations with established investors in early-stage startups. Looking to provide you with great nuggets of information when raising or considering raising seed capital. Pitch Deck is supported by Trumpet. If you work in sales or marketing and are tired of spending hours a week creating sales decks, then Trumpet is for you. Design personalized, interactive, and trackable mini sites in a few clicks. Stand out from the crowd whilst also giving your customers a seamless experience from pitch to onboarding. To find out more, visit www.sendtrumpet.com. That's sendtrumpet.com. And join the best in brass. So I'm delighted to welcome Rhys Chowdhury into the Pitch Deck studio today. Rhys is founding partner of the multi-award-winning Concept Venues, which is the largest dedicated pre-seed fund in the UK, $60 million. Concept focuses on investing in companies that reshape how we work, play, and learn. Rhys has invested in over 80 startups from idea up to unicorn and has been ranked as one of the top Asian tech investors on numerous occasions by Diversity UK. Prior to founding Concept, Rhys built and sold several startups in the software space, one of which was successfully exited, one a complete disaster, his words not mine, and one is still going today. He's passionate about giving back too. Rhys has created the Concept Venture Pledge, where a percentage of Concept's exit profits are donated to a social cause of the founder's choice. He's also been selected by the FT as one of the top 100 BAME leaders in tech for his consistent work in helping promote diversity in the UK tech sector. So based on that intro, we've got a lot to learn from Rhys, and I'm super excited to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Nick. Thanks for having me on the show. Really appreciate it.
So lots to cover in a short time, but I want to dive in first around Concept. So let the listeners know what work, play, and learn actually means and the types of companies that you're looking for.
Sure. So first of all, as a fund, we're focused on in the UK. And our thesis is that work, play, and learn, and particularly when we think about those areas, changing the way people work, play, and learn, we think they're kind of, you know, interchangeable and interoperable so much in today's society. So even when you've got something that is maybe a productivity tool that you work with, it's almost sometimes gamified. And then at the same time, you could learn something from it as well. And so I think those three areas are very kind of interchangeable. But I mean, as a broad brush, if I simplify it down to those three areas, it could be anything from something that's like an education tool, like we have a business in our portfolio called Good Course, which is, you know, TikTok micro learning, to something like, you know, on the play sector, a game studio. So something like Landmark Games, which is creating social games on mobile. And then to the work section, you know, something like ReachDesk, which is a B2B corporate gifting platform. So those are kind of the three areas. I think as a fund, we are very, very founder focused. And, you know, everyone says that, but we're like on another level. Like we do very deep, you know, a deep testing that from on a personality level that we created in-house, like which has been helped develop with psychologists in-house and data scientists. So because we're a pre-seed fund, we're really, really focused on who people are and what characteristics make them great. And so those three kind of verticals are like general in the sense that it keeps our mind open. And so I suppose what we don't invest in is medical software and hardware typically.
And yeah, I want to dive into a few of those things. But before that, I'm interested in, you know, when you're setting up a fund, when you sit down and think, okay, what is our thesis going to be? Of course, the founder focus side, but in terms of the verticals you want to play in, how does that thinking go? Like, how is that decision-making process done? You know, is it based on your experience, what you enjoy, what you think there are going to be tailwinds over the next 10 years? Yeah, I'd just like to learn a bit more about that.
Sure. I think a combination of all those things. I think intrinsically, VC is a kind of a strange job, which is a combination of like what your strengths are, what your passions are and interests are, and some a combination of your previous experience. And I think as a team, you know, there's six of us in our team, we all bring a certain different lens to that and background and experience. And so I think the tailwind thing is a good question. I get asked that a lot. And I think the tailwinds are very, very difficult to predict in terms of, you know, if you are a crypto investor in 2022, you might look a bit stupid now. And if you were investing in generative AI in 2022, you might look very clever now. So I think I really believe it's important not to get too caught up in kind of industry trends. And I find that smart founders that kind of tick our boxes gravitate to industries and problems and challenges that are able to create big outcomes in venture. And I think that's what it's about. And it's a very humbling industry generally, because you think one minute you think you're like a hero and one minute you're zero. So I think what we've learned is just to be very like low ego with the whole, even our investing style is very low ego. So we have like a, you know, a large portfolio. And I always tell people, like, you know, we're not here to predict the future. And that's why we're not doing 10 companies in a fund. Like we're, you know, we're having, and I'm sure Nick, given your angel, prolific angel track record, you've probably seen that as well. And that often is through learned experience. But to answer your question, we're very driven by what's in front of us. And in terms of like founders will come with like, I don't know, just looking at our pipeline, like, you know, maybe like a VR game. And we're like, okay, that's like an interesting space. And like, let's dive deep into that and see like what are the trends and the factors. Is Apple coming out with their glasses? Then, you know, so we go very deep in those high level verticals when we're confronted with a founder who has an interesting view of the world. And I think that's what really excites us, because we're like, okay, we're going to go and learn, spend a week learning about this new thing. And then, you know, sometimes that'll help another decision down the road. But we're not, I suppose, I know a lot of funds have these kind of very thematic view of the world. And I think that doesn't suit our investing style, because where we sit in the stack, often companies change three times. I mean, the example I always give is Slack. Slack started off as a games company and obviously became the communication mammoth it is today. And so like but the founders were great, right? So I think that's, you know, a kind of lesson that we've always seen through our portfolio.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. And I think I've seen actually on social recently, some of the, you know, the biggest funds a year ago, they did like their landscape mapping of their investments in Web3. and now suddenly they're doing their landscape mapping of their investments in AI. So it just shows how quickly it can change. So yeah, I agree with that thesis as well. So, you know, find the right founders and just ones that are trying to make a change in the everyday, really. So looking at you as an operator as well. So, you know, for me, there's not enough VCs out there that are operators. So, you know, that's why I'm a big fan of yourself and what you're doing. You've lived the walk, so you know exactly what the founders you're investing in are going through. I'm interested how you think as an ex-operator, you look at startups and founders differently, perhaps, versus your traditional VC from investment banking who's never been a founder. Do you think you come at it from a different lens?
Yeah, I think, maybe just touching on the kind of founding experience as well. I mean, I was stupid in the sense that when I left my previous career at EY, you know, I was fortunate to partner up with almost three companies at the same time and doing all the kind of non-technical stuff. So that could be everything from fundraising to operations to people, et cetera, helping them through those kind of journeys. As like, in all of those situations, I was like one of three kind of in that kind of founding piece. And so I think one of the things I really, really observed is that the speed of execution is often really, really important with startups, because if you miss the kind of boat, competition, better funded, you know, someone just comes out you slightly before you, I think that is one of the things that until you've like kind of lived and breathed it every day, you find it's hard to see from like a kind of iBanking, you know, background. And I think the iBanking stuff, which is quote, is actually, I think iBankers probably make very good like Series A and Series B investors, to be honest. I think that's actually probably a good thing in a lot of ways. But I think it's a craft at the early stage for sure. And I think that if you've just, even the way we built the fund is like kind of the way I wish we had like it available to us, you know, during those journeys. So like, for example, we have our term sheet on our website, or we tell you, you know, the cross section of who our LP base is, or, you know, we lay everything out there in front of you with no, like, kind of, we tell you what our hobbies are and interests are, because it's a people business, you know. And so I think we really try to take some of that experience, and also the experience as a team, even though some of our team haven't had like maybe deep operator experience, all of them are outsiders to VC. And that, I think, comes across in our brand and like what we're trying to build, because I think having the outsiders mentality allows us just do things differently. I mean, I'll give you a small example. When people like come to our office, founders come to our office for like an IC, we like email them before and say like, what's your favorite cup of coffee? What's your favorite, you know, fruit or snack or whatever? And we have that like ready for them. Or, you know, even now we're putting like, what's your favorite music? So when they come in, like, you know, we have their music playing, and just, it's just, yeah, just experience.
Yeah, I don't think you'd want Radiohead blaring out when I come to the office. It's a bit of a downbeat start to the meeting.
We try. But anyway, it's just a small example of how we're trying to always kind of small things, 1% add up. And like, you know, having that end mentality is very different to a lot of kind of old school VCs who just don't move with the times.
Yeah, I love that. I love that approach. And you could probably answer for 20 minutes alone on this question. So let's maybe do like your top two or three. But as an ex, you know, operator and founder, what are, say, the three traits you look for, let's say, on that first 30-minute call after you've, you know, you light the deck, so let's jump on that call. What does that founder or founders have to show you, those top three traits in that 30-minute call, for you to think, regardless of the idea, that, okay, they're backable?
Yeah, I think the number one thing is demonstrating the ability to do something to that point with like a speed and often like a resource gap. So someone will come in to us and say, you know, I started this 3 months ago. I actually know the founder I'm working with. We built up a prototype. Here's some Figma designs. This is like, you know, how we're thinking the vision of the world. These are the people we're going to have bring on board. I basically thought differently about the approach to everything. Like, I went on the one I like better than anything is a firm called Cliff AI, which we sold last year. We led the pre-seed round, and Ayush, who one of the founders of the team, he came into our board meeting, IC or meeting before, one of the first meetings, and I was like, how did you get some, you know, initial kind of pilot customers or whatever? And he was like, I went to the website of my closest competitor, I saw all their logos of those people, I called them all up and said, we can do this better, cheaper, faster. Do you guys want to sign up? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, so I was like, just something where, like, something like that, where it's like, it's just not a normal, they like thought laterally to like a problem and a situation, which is, and I don't like the kind of hustle culture we have, but like, I think it's when you see something like that, where you're like, actually, that's like gone something very different. Taking something in a very different way. I think that's what we look for. I think definitely one thing as I've really seen over my career is that the ability to take people on a journey with you and a vision with you. And you, as you, Nick, your second time as founder, I think the first time you did it, I think you learned so much about like managing people, taking people on that journey. And I think one of the things I really look for is like in previous careers, it doesn't have to be startups, is like, how have you like really elevated the people around you? Because I think without doing that and understanding that, I think that's really hard to build a unicorn startup. I really think that. I think you can't do it alone, right? And an awareness of that and yourself is just like really. And then I think like an understanding of like where the vision you see the world happening is, like, if everything was like perfect and went right, how do you see this playing out? And, you know, to give you a good example of that is, like, you know, we've recently invested in this company called 11 Labs, which is a like synthetic voice company. You upload a minute of your voice and you basically can, you know, have that perfectly read out in text. So think of audiobooks, articles, podcasts. So, you know, Matty and Peter came in and they said, look, if all of this goes right, basically every single text-to-speech product will be using our platform in some capacity, from call centers to, you know, audiobooks to creators, etc. And so they painted that vision of the world. It might not go that way, but it's just like the way they did that. And they were like ex-Palantir, Google. So they hadn't done a startup before, but they were like, these are the people we're going to hire. We know them. We've worked with them. We've worked together before. This is where we've had a lot of problems, resilience that they've had in working together. And so these are kind of, I'm just giving brain dump here, but like we have a systematic process for us, but like these are things I just testing in our 30 minute call more than anything.
Yeah, and no, I think that's a really good way of looking at it. I really like the idea of showing that you've elevated people around you. I don't think I've heard an investor say that before. So I think if you can show that, that's true. And I totally agree on just showing something. I get a lot of early stage founders coming to me going, well, look, we're pre-product, we're pre-revenue, you know, so we can't really show you traction. And, you know, Trumpet, when we raised pre-product, pre-revenue, as you said, we showed all the Figma designs and then we'd spoken to 200 salespeople. That costs you nothing and just costs you time. And not only for obviously amazing feedback, but just to show investors that you haven't just created this idea out of thin air and you're just building it. You've gone and done your research and you've got a list of potential customers when you launch. I think people just don't think about that. It's so easy to do. So yeah, I think there's some great points there. Obviously, diversity is important to you as well. And, you know, there's obviously all the stats around poorly funded of sort of, you know, ethnic minority, gay, women founders out there. I think part of this comes from networks. So, you know, middle class, private school educated, white founders probably have a much stronger network. So I'd love to hear your advice for founders who, you know, aren't plugged into the VC network. You know, what is the best way to grab the attention of someone like yourself personally or your fund and other, let's just say, even investor associates out there in different funds that you're keen to work with? What tips can you offer?
Yeah, I think look, the I'm not going to go into the industry problems. I think there's a lot of problems with, you know, all industries with diversity, and venture capital, I think, is, you know, right to highlight a lot of those kind of funding issues. Essentially, we are decision makers and we do have a duty, because, you know, the companies we fund often are the companies of the next generation, and, you know, that always weighs heavy on our mind. And I think the way we've thought about that is, you know, having this kind of personality led investing approach allows to level the playing field, in the sense that we're not looking if you went to work at Facebook before. And so a lot of VCs, they optimize for credibility on a CV rather than like the person in front of them. And I think I'll give you a great example of that. Olga, who runs a company called Empire in our portfolio, she's probably like all of the things that, you know, a VC would like discount. She was young. She was a female founder. She came from more of a creative background. She didn't go to like, you know, a top five university in the world. But last year she created the fastest growing company in our portfolio by a mile and did a Series A with Base 10. Which is a US fund, and everyone passed the pre-seed or whatever, like your usual suspects. And then, you know, the amount of emails I got at Series A. So I think investors generally are just sheep, like for stuff. And I think you, from founders' perspective, don't take it too personally. But to answer your question, Nick, I think that the world is becoming more democratized in terms of access to information. And when you're approaching VCs, I think one of the things, or angels, I think enough people don't do the research about who we are. They'll come to us with, like, for example, like a meg tech business, or they'll come to us with, like, you know, something was raising 3 million round, and we're like, no, we don't participate in 3 million pound rounds. And so first of all, really understand the motives of the people around you. Don't be, and really, I think a lot of people grab our attention if they're like really specific to like us. They're like, hey, this is how someone, for example, could reach out and impress us. They are founders. There's over 100 of them. They're on our website. Reach out to a couple of them. They'll probably be very receptive. You're building something in their area, which you would be if you're kind of approaching us. You know, email them and just say, look, what do you think? You know, what do you think of this or our idea? And or go to events. They're doing events every week. It's on Eventbrite. Go meet them and be like, concept, like, what's your best way to kind of like meet them? Or like, approach them or whatever. Like startup VCs in the ecosystem, like literally there's an event every single week you could attend and like go and shake somebody's hand. Like this week I was speaking at a panel on Thursday, open to everybody. I stayed an hour and a half afterwards. I spoke to everybody. Like you could have just come and spoken to me there. Like, and actually someone did. And actually I have a meeting right today in a really interesting startup that just came up to me afterwards at that event. Like, you know, so it's just taking initiative and being, you know, different, I think.
And what's the, let's say someone does meet you at an event and, you know, you're swamped with lots of people, you know, there's a queue of people around them waiting for you. If they have that minute to impress you, how do they impress you in that minute?
Yeah, I think it's go back to the research point. It's like, you know, they're sitting in an event probably like half an hour or 40 minutes. If they were like, you know, I looked up your site, you know, we're raising a pre-seed round. This is where we sit in your verticals. I looked up some of your startups, saw that you invested in something like, you know, an ad tech business like PubX, which me and Nick are investors in. So shout out to them. You know, we're building something like this in the space. And this is how we, you know, we're thinking differently. I'll be like, okay, that's impressed me. You've done your research. You know what we invest in. We know the route, you know, invest in certain stage of companies. And, you know, this is why you think we're, you know, you're a good fit. And so, yeah, I think that would really, I would most likely take your meeting 9 times out of 10 if someone did that. And it's so rare that someone actually does that. Like so rare. Like 1 in 100 people.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I get a lot of cold outreach that you can just see a generic, and yeah, more often than not, they just go straight in the bin. Because if you think the founder hasn't got the nous to just personalize their outreach, then you know that doesn't give you a good impression of how they're going to be as a founder as well. So I totally agree with that. And the final question for the last minute, as we call pitch deck, what top 3 tips would you give for the pitch deck that lands in your inbox to get that 30-minute meeting?
Number one, it's a pitch deck to get a 30-minute meeting. Think of the person on the other end. Think how little time they probably will spend on it. They're probably flicking through in 30 seconds. Understand you have to communicate your vision at that level. And there's some really good examples. I think you can even go on our website about how to create a pitch deck. So, you know, be very succinct, very top level. And really try to understand, you know, personally, I like you know, people now sending me stuff in Figma, in Canva. And I think that it's, for me, that's like really interesting when you could, they bring to life something which is like quite static, but then like not too text heavy, I would say. So I think that for me really works. And this might be, this is going to be a very controversial comment about the whole deck thing. Actually, personally, the open rates on investors with PDFs is much, much higher. I know DocSend has become the standard, but nearly every VC I speak to says, I just convert it into a PDF when it lands in my inbox. So you don't get the stats and you're getting a lower open rate. So, you know, actually optimize the whole thing for a sales process. And like, if you're getting better, if you're going to get something that gives you better open rates, go for it, in my opinion. And so, yeah, tell your story and, you know, really understand. If you're pitching to lots of different types of investors, then maybe have different decks for different audiences, you know, as well. Because I think a lot of founders just generically spam it out, right? Which is less effective, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I think they're all great points. Speed is the biggest one. And I've preached this to the hills for years. And it still astounds me when I get decks that are just like essays with slides full of text. And you just want to tell me the problem and solution in the first 2 slides very clearly. And I'll either connect with that or I won't connect with that. But don't make me go hunting for the information within a thesis. So yeah, I think speed is so important for all founders. I could talk to you for another hour, but we're short on time on Pitch Deck. So where, if people want to pitch you or pitch Concept, what's the best way to do that or to find your content?
Yes, I think our website is quite well laid out, but I think obviously we do get inundated on the website. So do channel through LinkedIn. Our email address is on our website, all of ours. It's very open. So, you know, feel free to bombard us as well. Say you listen to the podcast.
Exactly.
That would be a good tip.
Listen to the podcast, spoken to some of your portfolio, and here's our deck.
I honestly say, Nick, in the last year, I would say one person has probably done something like that. Yeah. That's how low how low you do to actually have to impress us in that sense.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a challenge to all of the Pitch Deck listeners. Go and impress Reese, please. So thank you so much. I've really admired the work you've done from afar for ages. So delighted to have you on the podcast. And yeah, thanks for being part of it.
Thanks, Nick. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. And if you enjoyed it, I'd hugely appreciate it if you can share it on socials or indeed just with your network. If you're feeling extra generous, I'd absolutely love it if you could leave us a review on Spotify, the Play Store, or iTunes. That is the only way we get more listeners. So thanks for that. And just to remind you that Pitch Deck is sponsored by Trumpet. So go check out www.sendtrumpet.com.